Welcome back to Mindful Minds. I am so excited for you guys to hear this episode. As many of you know, the podcast is going on a hiatus. If you haven't heard or that comes as a shock to you, so sorry. Didn't mean to drop it on you in the beginning of the episode, but feel free to go back and check out my Instagram or episode, I believe 79 or 80. I have a little bit of a chat about it at the beginning. But I say all of that because I'm so glad that we got to have Woman Being on the show before we take the hiatus. I'm so glad we got to cover the topic that we cover in this episode. I have had so many people talk to me about the crazy, messy, sticky balance that is learning to cope with the harm that you did while in religion and how to take accountability for that and also have grace for the younger you who didn't know better. It's a very weird and nuanced topic, and there aren't really exact right answers to that. But I'm so glad that we got to take the time to unpack it and talk about it and be honest and be vulnerable and talk about a topic that is wildly uncomfortable and not very fun to talk about. But the ladies at Woman Being are so welccoming and kind and graceful, and it was such an honor to have this conversation with them. With that being said, we of course have trigger warnings because, you know, that's how this works. So we do talk about homophobia and transphobia, ableism, racism, suicide, religious trauma, depression, exorcisms, and demonic expression. And then we do talk about self-harm and scarring a little bit in this episode. So if you are someone who is triggered by the talk of self-harm, I'm one of those people. So just be aware. And then we also talk about the death of a young child. That was a pretty tragic death. And the healing culture trauma around how charismatic churches handle healing that impacted that situation. So please be aware of that as well as you enter this episode. If that is something that is not a safe space for you or that is triggering, please take care of yourself first. I don't timestamp it because it is just an ongoing theme in the episode. So just be aware coming into this episode that that's what we're going to be talking about. Other than that, I love this episode. It is a long one, so brace yourselves. We almost hit 2 hours, but it's so good. And the ladies at Woman Being are amazing. Make sure to go check out their podcast as well. Okay, here we go. Hi, all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we're going to be talking about moving past the mistakes we made when we were Christians, which I've wanted to talk about on the podcast for a long time. I've had people message me about it and feel kind of stuck as to how to take ownership for the things they did when they were in religion, how to forgive themselves, how to hold themselves accountable. And it's kind of a sticky, nuanced, weird topic that can also bring up a lot of guilt and shame for people. But I feel like it's really important to talk about. And so today we have Kelly Ann, and Emma of the Woman Being podcast on to chat about that and kind of dive deep into a little bit of the messiness that is like exiting religion. It's kind of weird and it's kind of funky. So do you guys want to share a little bit about your background and why you started Woman Being?
Yeah, absolutely.
We do.
Yeah. Oh, I love how you opened up to like just diving into the gray, because that's kind of what we aim to do. So I guess a little bit of background around me. I grew up in a conservative Christian space, specifically Methodist, but I was actually homeschooled. So I had a very intense Christian upbringing, some might say. And then I actually, once I graduated high school, moved away to a small rural town in Northern California to attend a unaccredited ministry school that is pretty well known, but I would define as a cult. And basically through a lot of circumstances, working for that organization after I graduated, realized this is all pretty messed up. And I don't think that this is actually what Jesus had in mind. Full context and disclosure now, I do not identify as a Christian. I don't know if I necessarily identify as anything. I am spiritual. I do have like some levels of spiritual practice, but I'm also not rushing myself to figure out what my religious expression looks like. I know religion is an important part of the human experience, or relationship to a higher power. But for me, I'm kind of like, let's just let this breathe and air out. So I'm, what, 4 years into deconstruction, which is a horrible, hard process. So serious grace and love to anyone going through it. I had a mental breakdown going through it. It is not an easy thing. So yeah. And then I met these two gals.
Yes.
which has been the best, and they've been so supportive throughout the journey. Mm-hmm. So yeah, why don't you two share a little bit about you?
I would say Kelly and I, had very similar experiences, in the sense that we both grew up in these very conservative and sort of like isolated kind of sects of Christianity. My parents, we lived in a very small town, so it wasn't like our local church specifically had any strangeness beyond just general evangelicalism, but my parents, and several like friends of ours in our circle were very sort of keen on the charismatic evangelical space. And so that led us into like a much more, I would say, zealous and radical form of Christianity than maybe your like typical Lutheran churchgoer. I'm from Minnesota, so, you know, there's a lot of Lutherans up there. God bless. But I ended up, well, I got married at 18, so that's a piece of it. Ended up going to work at a missions organization as a full-time missionary in Orlando, Florida, where I served for 2 years, and then had to come out of that because it was just, I mean, it was honestly heartbreaking, my experience working there. It was very, very not right for me, and very abusive, manipulative, and just overall, I guess, coercive. And ended up leaving there to go work at the same charismatic space that Kelly ended up in. I got a job up here in Northern California and started working at this church, which unfortunately was not a redemption story for my not so great experiences with the church at that point in my life. And I would say my deconstruction process actually probably started in college, as I started picking apart like some of the purity culture that had kind of been indoctrinated in me, especially in regards to like modesty and sexual abstinence and all of that. So that's really where it started. I started unraveling this like purity messaging. And then I think it really started to spiral, like many people, in 2020 with COVID. I think Ravi Zacharias was a big, what's the word, catalyst for me to kind of pull away from the church. And so, yeah, now I would identify as heartbroken. I have a friend of mine who, he and I would attend the same charismatic Christian camp in the summers, and he identified as Christian-ish agnostic, which I really identified with because I think so much of my culture and who I am as a person is very much built in this Christian space, but I don't necessarily ascribe to the same beliefs anymore. And very much in a big I don't know as far as spirituality is concerned. So that's where I'm at now.
Yeah. To quickly sum up where I'm at, Emma, I grew up in the Southeast, so it was the Bible Belt deep. Everyone was Christian. I was very familiar with Christianity. But I wouldn't say that I converted into Christianity until I was starting high school, and I didn't really grow up in a Christian household per se. And so I kind of came into it a little bit later and wound up going very hardcore in the sort of non-denominational Baptist-ish realm, and then eventually turned more charismatic as I went into college, and wound up going into the mission field for a year. And basically, all of my life was about being a Christian at that time. And so eventually I, through many series of events, came to work at the same church as Kelly and Kellyanne here in Northern California. We all met there, working there, and we, I think, bonded a lot over the questions that we started having, especially with Donald Trump being elected to the presidency and Christians rallying behind him. I never was someone who identified as Republican or even conservative, but I was so heartbroken by the way that so many Christians supported him. Mm-hmm. Even though I knew they were Republicans or conservatives, it was like, how could you come behind this man of all the men that were options? And then as the pandemic happened, I think it became an incubator for all of our individual deconstruction journeys. Similar to Kelly, I would say I've been sort of deconstructing always. There's always been things that I've been questioning. And thankfully, I grew up with parents that really taught me to think critically. And that was something that was vital in the way that my mom raised me specifically, in that she wanted me to be able to think about what I believe. And she thought I was joining a cult when I became a Christian. So, which who's to say? Anyways, I feel like, came to realize that we were all asking a lot of the same questions. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question of how Woman Being started, I think that it was sort of birthed out of that question asking, out of lots of late night conversations amongst one another. We were sort of within each other's bubble during the pandemic and basically just saw each other. And so we figured if we're having these conversations and other people probably are too, and we wanted to open it up. One of the things that I love about Woman Being is that it feels like the questions that maybe you felt like you weren't allowed to ask growing up, the questions that you felt were out of bounds or too taboo, we are sort of like the big sisters coming in and saying, you know what, you can ask those questions and we're going to talk about it. And there's not a judgment here. There's no, there's nothing that's out of off limits. Like, we're here to talk and we're here to explore the gray. We don't have all the answers, but we have a lot of questions and we have a lot of thoughts. In terms of where I'm at faith-wise, I actually do still identify as Christian. I would say that I am progressive universalist Christian at this point. I am part of a very, very small church community here that is very progressive, and very in the realm of deconstruction. I go to a deconstruction support group that's at my church that's about, like, my pastor is just, we just talk about all the pain that we feel about Christian nationalism and homophobia and all those different things. And
oh my God.
But that's me.
That's so cool. What the hell? I've had so many people ask me, like, do you have any deconstruction resources in terms of actual therapy and support? And I'm like, I know of like three.
Like, yeah.
I wish I had more for you. I really don't.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. It's interesting that your guys' experiences are all like slightly different, so that'll be fun too, to go into this with a little bit of a different perspective from everybody. My podcast already knows this to an extent, but I also grew up in religion from very young age, and I was in Assemblies of God, so that was my realm. And we got quite charismatic when I was like middle to high school. We had some folks come in from Bethel, and they started to like preach at our church, and some of them got hired on staff, and it like totally changed the culture of the church, especially the youth group. And we went a lot more charismatic than we were previously. But yeah, I think similar to everybody, like my deconstruction started kind of in like 2018, I think. And it was parallel to my assault investigation, and it was just like a lot more questions were being asked because I was just kind of like, hey, what the fuck? What is going on? How do I process this? And then I officially left the church in June of 2020, and like made an announcement and was like, goodbye.
No,
like, I want to like actually make it very clear that I'm done. And yeah, the election was a huge catalyst for that. specifically, like I think I already mentioned to you guys, but I did 2 years of community college while I was in high school. So when I was 16, I went to a public community college for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it was my first like step into anything that wasn't religious. All of my friends had been religious my whole life. Like all of my extracurriculars were religious. And I entered this community college environment, and it was in 2016, I think. So 2016, right during like the peak of the election, it was like fall semester, and I had a political science teacher, and I had never been taught anything about political science because I grew up in Christian schools my whole life, and yeah. they don't really teach you a lot of actual education. yeah. And so I was like sitting there, and I like didn't know what the Electoral College was. I didn't know how to vote. I didn't understand Congress. And I'm like, I'm 16, 2 years away from voting, and I have like no idea how anything works. And we had someone come in, and I had already been pretty opposed to Trump. Like I, even as a Christian, was really frustrated. Specifically, I was always pretty passionate about women's rights, and I was still very actively homophobic at the time, but I was very passionate about women's rights, and I felt very upset about the fact that he didn't share those values. Like, it really bothered me, but I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't super loud about it. I was also the kid that grew up, and I was like, when George Bush got elected, I was like, woohoo, like, I love him, and I like know nothing about him. I'm just like a parrot. And I was also like taught there was a whole conspiracy like in 2008 that like Obama was the Antichrist. And I was like convinced that that was true. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't, I still think I kind of, I like self-identified as a Republican when I was like five. was like, yeah, like this is who I am. Yeah. And I don't really know where I was when I was 16 in terms of that, but I just felt, I felt weird about Trump. Mm-hmm. Like it was like, this doesn't feel right. Like this doesn't feel, even though all of everyone around me is very supportive of this person, like I, it feels wrong. And I, it just didn't feel like how Jesus would act. Like it just felt contradictory to me. And I had someone come into my political science class on the day that the election results were announced and said that, he had gotten harassed on the way into class by like a group of white guys in like a red truck. And he was a black man in his like early 20s. And I was like, oh fuck. Like, oh fuck, this is a lot worse than I thought it was. And it like hit me in class of like, ooh, I don't have a perspective on this that I thought I had. And I kind of was just like, okay. Like this is worse than I thought it was. Like people are, actual humans that I've been in class with for the last few months are feeling unsafe. Like that's bigger than I thought it was. And I kind of put that in the back of my mind for a little bit and was always like for the next 2 years was like always trying to kind of be a little bit more progressive and like push boundaries and stuff and like advocate for consent. And it wasn't until like I was actively stepping out of religion that I started like really, but I was kind of always like the, you know, is creation real? Like, was it a metaphor? Yeah. Like, you know, trying to like, really like dive into stuff. But 2020 for me was just I had already been on my way out, but I was like, I need to like tell everybody in my life. And also just so that people didn't think I was associated with Christians because the Christian community was being so fucking embarrassing. They were being so embarrassing. And I was like, I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want folks to see me and identify my belief system with these people. Like and that's why I made the announcement to like both clarify to my community, hey, you've known me as this person you can come to for prayer. I'm not that person anymore. Don't come to me for that. Wow. And I also wanted to make it very clear, like my beliefs do not align with the people that I grew up with. And I want to make that like abundantly clear. And at the time I had a massive ass Bible verse tattoo on my arm that was truly tragic. I mean, it looked like a branding. It was huge, like huge. Got it like the day after graduation. It was gigantic. And I would have people walk up to me and like see that. And this is what's so crazy about all of this. Like see the Bible verse that in my opinion is like, it actually like, it's a very poetic Bible verse. Like I still like it. And very quickly, like associate me with all of their beliefs, just simply because I had something that associated me with Christianity. It was like a,
oh, this is a safe person for me to be racist and homophobic mm-hmm. and ableist with. And I was yeah. like, ooh, okay, don't love mm-hmm. that. And so for a while, I was very outwardly like putting every bumper sticker on my car that was clarifying that I wasn't a Christian. It was like anything yeah. I could do to make it clear that like, no, like I'm not that person that you should feel safe with to like say these horrifically discriminatory things. Mm-hmm. And it's become a very just like common part of American culture. And it's weird. There's been like a very interesting, weird shift where politics have shifted pretty significantly. And you now have a political group being not the representative for necessarily politics anymore. It's like, it's these horrible things that people can stand behind and find their look across the room and see a Trump hat and be like, I can go make a racist joke to you and it's going to be fine. And it's bizarre. Yeah. And I think it's extended to other aspects where there isn't the ability to just be kind to people. Like I had someone yesterday at the gas station. It was an older woman and she barked at this man because they pulled in head on head, like mm-hmm. car wise in the gas mm-hmm. station, because there were no other spots open, which is fine, like whatever. And this older woman got like super frustrated and was like bitching at him, whatever. She was annoyed. She was being rude. And I saw her being rude and he stood up for himself. So I was like, all right, you're chilling. And I saw her start to drive away and her gas thing was open. And so I went, oh, your gas thing is open. And she goes, oh, thank you. Wasn't that man just an asshole? And associated my act of kindness with trying to help her yeah. as a, oh, you and I share belief systems of agreeing mm-hmm. that this man sucks. Like, it was just bizarre. And I was yeah. like, okay, like, and it threw me through a loop where I was like, should I have not been nice? Like, did yeah. I accidentally just like reinforce something in her of making it feel like it was okay to do that? Like, and it really like shook my brain up a little bit. And I've just noticed that there's been this culture shift in general in America where it's just everyone wants to take a side. And, yeah. and it's also very important because there are sides to be taken and there are things that need to be stood up against, but it's just interesting because there are certain, if you have a Bible in your hand, you're not looked at as just someone who loves God, and you're looked at as a part of a Christian nationalist group.
Yeah.
Like it's a different meaning now. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the main reasons where to me, it was just like, I already have some questions about the theology. I already feel like it doesn't add up. I don't want to be grouped in with these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I'd rather just like, if I go to hell, I go to hell. Like, whatever. It's fine. I don't want to deal with this while I'm here. And so it just wasn't worth it to me. Like, even with all the fear mongering and the shame and the like guilt tripping, it just wasn't worth it to me. Yeah. And then to bring it back to our topic, then I had to sit and face all of the shitty things that I did and said. Yeah. And, all the really awful messaging that I communicated in a time where there's a lot of calls for accountability. Mm-hmm. And that can be really scary. Like in an environment where you're thinking, oh shit, like if I admit to the fact that I used to be homophobic, like is everyone going to hate me? Mm-hmm. And it can be kind of nerve-wracking to like sit there and sit with it and say, I did a bad thing. I was under a group and I made bad choices and mm-hmm. I can grow and I can move forward. And I making bad choices doesn't make me a bad person. Mm-hmm. And trying to come to terms with that is weird. It's yeah. very weird. And it's mm-hmm. also very nuanced and very funky. And there like aren't right answers to it. And it's just weird. And it's one of the reasons why I saw on your guys' Instagram page, you had a post about like, you're like my past as a discriminatory Christian or something like that. Like it was something mm-hmm. along those lines. And I was like, mm-hmm. that would be a really good topic. Yeah. So going with that, I'm actually going to skip through our outline a teensy bit because I actually want to start with something different. Right. What was, did you guys have a moment where you realized that what you had done in the past was harmful? Like, did you have a moment? Did you have a specific situation? Or was it a general unpacking?
Oof. That's a really good question. And I don't know how to answer it protecting people really well. But there was this one situation that happened, where a child had tragically passed away in the church community that I was a part of. And I might get emotional talking about this. And I have nothing but love and respect for the family. It was just one of those horrible situations that has no answers. But the church rallied and prayed for the child to come back to life. And I remember sitting and watching this happen and just thinking, something is so wrong here. Obviously this is a hard, hard situation. A community is grieving, and there's so much, there's so much heightened emotion. But when I tell you there were prayer nights after prayer nights after prayer nights, and something broke in me in that situation. And I realized, I don't know how, I don't know the theology behind it, but my inner knowing, my spirit, if you will, was just like, this has been wrong. And I have participated in praying for miracles, in preaching and evangelizing in ways that has been phenomenally dehumanizing and in ways that has diminished the human experience. And I can't participate in that anymore. And that for me was the real tipping point. There had been a potential chance for me up until then of like, maybe this Christianity stuff will all work out. I don't know. But at that point it was like, absolutely not. I'm not going back, and I can't go back. And when I say I couldn't go back, I would have visceral emotional reactions to worship music that used to be something that would really touch me and be like impactful for me, and things of that nature. So while that for me, there was a really stark moment of like, this is your point of no return, there was also many, many other maybe creeping moments, and it was a process. And so, I mean, I look back now still, and I won't lie, I still grieve, because I was in such an extreme environment and success looked like mimicking that extremeness. And I wanted to be good. I wanted to be a good Christian. I wanted to do the Lord's work. And realizing that was me being manipulated for, let's get real, a white man empowers gain.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. And so feeling grief for my own actions, while also feeling so angry that I was taken advantage of, but also trying to make peace with the fact that I did not have the tools to make any better decision.
Yes.
And that sucks. Mm-hmm. But now, as grown-up Kellyanne, I get to try and advocate for myself in the spaces that I put myself in and the things that I align myself with. And that is now my life's work, honestly, undoing the shame, undoing the grief, or being present with it. Honestly, not even undoing it, being present with it and allowing myself to move through it as the opportunity allows. So that's my very long-winded answer.
I think that's a great answer.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I just think that's a great answer. And that situation was also an undoing point for me. So I think it was for a lot of people, and it was horrific to watch. Absolutely horrific to watch.
Yeah, it was, and it's still, it's absolutely gutting. Still to this day. And I was very embedded in that community. And like, I don't think it's okay to provide answers to grieving parents like, well, we just might never know. Like, when there's this possibility of like, well, if the stars aligned, if it was right, if it was in God's will, your child would be here. Like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah.
I've actually spoken about that incident on the podcast before.
Really?
And we've gone into it very far in depth because we've talked about prosperity gospel and the harm that that does to everyone involved, primarily people who have been disproportionately impacted by systemic injustice, because there is this base belief that it's just about faith. And if you have enough faith, it'll happen. And we talked about that situation and the fact that it gets really uncomfortable and really icky and quite nauseating when you pour your entire heart into that and say, well, if we have enough faith, if we have enough faith, if we have enough faith, and then it doesn't fucking happen.
Yeah.
It's a real, like, cold, intense, like, slap to the face of like, ooh, are we sticking to our theology here? Are we going to stick to that and own it and now tell this grieving mother she didn't have enough faith?
Yeah.
Or are we going to backpedal?
Yeah.
Because either one is shitty.
Yep.
Backpedaling, now your whole thing's crumbling. Now you have no integrity because that's what you've been preaching this whole time. So it does not apply to this situation. But sticking to it is also horrible.
Yep.
And they, I mean, that community has had that happen multiple times. They've had it. I mean, it's not the first time that they have preached the faith thing and it has slapped them in the face. And it is so harmful. And it often the communities that preach that are a community of a lot of white rich people.
Yes.
And it can be really easy to say, oh, I have all these lovely things because I'm faithful. Mm-hmm. When in reality, you have a lot of privilege. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot harder to go to communities that have been screwed over by systems and say, have more faith. And it's like, ooh, we're sticking to that? Really?
Oh, we're going
to buckle down with that?
Or just some people have favor and some don't.
Oh, don't get me started the on favor.
The favor of the Lord. Yeah, we had like, a really weird, great...
Like, all the people with favor have the same color skin or are the same sex.
Yeah.
Like,
how
weird.
There's a lot of men with a lot of favor out there. I've met.
That's really weird. Yeah,
how funky. Aww.
Yeah. No, I remember that event. And actually, one of my greatest regrets... Not greatest regrets, that's a little dramatic, but I regret one night I went to one of the worship services. And at this point in time, I was sort of like, God, if this really happened, right? Like, if this works, like, think of the souls that could be saved, right? Like, you're thinking, like, think of all the people that will believe, you know, if this girl walks out of the morgue, you know, and you really get caught up in that, that vision or that like hope that like God really is gonna come through. He really is gonna like show everyone his glory. You know, like think of all the people whose lives will be radically changed after this, you know? And, which I think is so often used as such a horrible manipulation tactic to get Christians to do the craziest shit. or not do the craziest shit. So that looking back on that and now thinking through like all of the people who make like sort of what's the word for when you go somewhere for a religious experience?
Oh, pilgrimage.
A pilgrimage. People make pilgrimages to this like church and like with severe depression, like suicidality, severe, genital disabilities, you know, like not genital. Oh my gosh.
General?
Genetic.
Oh, genetic.
Oh my God. Genetic disabilities, probably genital disabilities too. Like people who are gay, people who are trans, literally have a pilgrimage to this place, like hoping and believing that God is going to come through for them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's a sales pitch for something that doesn't work. You know, like, I don't know, the ethics of what is being offered in comparison to what's actually being given away from in that kind of space, not necessarily this church specifically, but I think the charismatic movement in general, it's so corrupt. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really struggle with this because, like, I have family members right now who are hoping, mm-hmm. you know, and waiting and
for
a miracle. Mm-hmm. And yeah. in some ways, I'm glad that they have something to hope for. You know, I know that can be very beneficial to the psyche and going through a hard thing. But in other ways, like, I want them to have like a groundedness and sort of like, an embracing of that human experience that, that I feel like this specific spiritual movement doesn't really allow for.
Yeah.
It's very painful.
Yeah, I agree. There's this, I grew up in a very, me and my mom had a deliverance ministry for several years, when I was a teenager. And, as an adult, how I've kind of reconciled this a little bit or tried to heal is realizing you can't pray away your problems. And that's the idea of like, well, you just pray and then you're mm-hmm. not anxious anymore, mm-hmm. or you just pray and you're not depressed. Mm-hmm. And believe me, those things will come find you whether you pray or not. Yeah. And like, mm-hmm. it is your opportunity to embrace that mm-hmm. and meet your humanity in that space and not just be like, well, we're going to send it up to God and he'll fix the problem. I'm like, what if it's not a problem to be fixed? Mm-hmm. You know, what mm-hmm. if your queerness is not a problem to be fixed? Mm-hmm. What if your mental challenges are not a problem to be fixed? What if that is part of your human experience that is uniquely valuable and uniquely beautiful? And it's not a problem. But unfortunately, in these charismatic spaces, if you don't look the way they want you to look, if you don't sound the way they want you to sound, you are immediately othered. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the main thing that I could not align myself with anymore. I'm like, I'm sorry, I have gay friends. They're pretty cool. There's like not mm-hmm. much of them. Or, you know, like,
or the
fill
ones,
in the blank.
Yeah, or the ones that are in the church are subjected to this ministry sort of healing experience. That's in quotations for anyone that's not watching video, where they are just consistently reminded of the fact that God has not come through for them yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're still gay.
Yeah.
Like they're still trans, you know, whatever it is. And, but they're just expected to kind of literally deny that part of themselves. Like, because you can't just pray away your anxiety, right? You can stuff it.
Yeah. You learn like
you can disassociate from it, you know, like,
very disassociated.
Yeah.
And that's
very
what you successfully did for many
years.
Yes. Cover me up as well.
You know, whatever. But it's this idea of like all these people that are waiting on like something from God that I don't think God's offering.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's making gay people straight. Mm-hmm. Or she or not, but like point being, it's just to me looking back, it's so unethical to like subject these people to these like study groups and these like prayer sessions and this, you know, kind of, I don't know. It's like,
it's just like, it's a Ponzi scheme. Like you're selling something that doesn't exist.
Yes.
And you're attaching a lot of shame mm-hmm. to that.
And you're making a lot of money doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that we talked about specifically with mega churches is, I mean, they're fucking businesses and anyone who says any different, I'm sorry. Like I don't do the right wrong thing very often, but they're mm-hmm. businesses. And if you think they're not, you're wrong. They are. They're businesses. Yeah. They're run like businesses. They're marketed like businesses. It's all very intentional.
Mm-hmm. They openly talk about how they have a business mindset because they're like super capitalist. I don't know.
Yeah.
The writing's like, they say it out of their mouths.
Yes. It's very clear. And I'll share my point, but Emma, do you want to share did you have a moment or did you have?
I wouldn't say that I have a specific moment. There's so many little moments, I think, that led towards various levels of deconstruction. And I think deconstructing faith is something that is a lifelong journey. But I will say there was one catalyst for me that was similar within the same church that made me realize I can't be part of this church, which was after this whole incident with this baby being attempted to be prayed back to life, and church started, the pandemic happened. Church started opening back up after the pandemic sort of was getting better. Mm-hmm. And I attended a service on Mother's Day, and there were some women that came up front and did like a prayer for the mothers on Mother's Day.
This.
And one of the things they said, which this is about a year after the attempt to raise the baby from the dead. And one of the mothers said, "Good job, all you mothers. You've kept your children alive."
Oh,
and
fuck.
I was appalled considering what had happened just a year before.
So bad.
And knowing like the level of just insensitivity and lack of awareness and like that combined with a myriad of other things, with lots of patriotism combined with lots of like stuffing down homosexuality, like all these things had built up, and then that happened, and I was like, I can't be part of this. I can't go here. Another thing, which is kind of a little bit on a separate vein, but one thing that was pretty disruptive, I think, to my faith was actually when I was on the mission field. I was part of a missions organization where we traveled to 11 countries in 11 months, and we did mission work in each country. And one of those countries was Malawi in Africa. And essentially, our ministry was to go to all of these local churches that were in pretty remote areas in Malawi and to preach to them as 20-year-olds. Yeah. And we were touted around as the white Americans that were there to deliver the good news of God to them, even by our African pastor who was like hosting us. And there was so much just white saviorism steeped into that. And so much, like, I felt so uncomfortable. And also, like, I had a lot of background at the time of preaching. Like, I had preached in my church a lot in high school and preached in college. But so many of the other people in our group had never preached before, none of us have really like gone through seminary. We don't have real educations about the Bible. And yet we are put forward in front of these churches that have mature adults that are leading them. And we 20-year-olds are told, you have a special gift from God as these Americans coming in to deliver a message to us that's going to bless us in some special way. And that was really disturbing to me. It felt like we were put on display and really lifted up and for some reason given so much authority in these spaces where we had no investment in the community. We had never met these people before, and we were brought in to preach a message and then carted away. And I think it made me feel like I was being sort of like idolized in this weird way. And then it also felt like, what have we done to tell these people that we are somehow at this like higher spiritual level than them? Like, how have we perverted Christianity so deeply that we are seen in this way? And that was very upsetting to me in my missions experience, and feeling like, there's nothing that has made me more qualified to be here, and yet I'm being put in a qualified position.
All right, for those of you who have been here for a bit, you've heard me talk about my pup, Stevie Ray. When Stevie was a puppy, she had some undiagnosed food allergies that resulted in her being super itchy. Luckily, we found Scout's Honor. Scout's Honor's products are probiotic and are lifesavers for pups with sensitive skin, who are prone to itchiness, or if you just want your pup to have the softest fur ever. We exclusively use Scout's Honor and have for the past 2.5 years. We love their unscented shampoo and conditioner and their probiotic paw spray, which is amazing for Frito-Toe pups. On top of their amazing products, with every bottle bought, they provide a meal for an animal in need. If you have a pet, I would highly encourage looking into Scout's Honor. And listeners of the podcast can use the code MINDFULMINDS for 20% off of a purchase of $50 or more. Again, that's code MINDFULMINDS for top-notch doggy grooming. I have been asked from so many people, how did you start your podcast? The answer is simple, Buzzsprout. I had no production experience when I started the show, and I used Buzzsprout's blog and website to teach myself how to get started. Buzzsprout not only lists your show on all major streaming platforms, but you also get access to a website, audio players, and custom sound bites. If you are looking to launch your dream podcast or you're looking for a new platform, Buzzsprout is the way to go. You can follow the link in our show notes to receive a $20 credit towards your membership, and you will be supporting our show. Happy podcasting!
Christian supremacy and white supremacy are buddies.
Yes.
They just love each other. I did not expect this to be an episode that focuses so much on charismatic Christianity, but funny enough.
Oh, I've got my, more.
But. Funny enough, like my experiences of the kind of, if, for lack of a better term, come to Jesus moments where I was like, woof, okay, yeah, this is really bad, also happened primarily in charismatic spaces where it was, I had a situation when I was in middle school, high school. And we had a pastor who, was one of the, I guess he was imported from Bethel, if you will, and came into our church and, was very charismatic, aggressive with his charismatic beliefs, very heavy on the healing, And, he kind of spread it like a wildfire where like, then we had a lot of folks go out and go to BSSM and come back. And then they were like kind of implanted into different leadership roles. And it kind of started spreading like a disease a little bit within our church. And there was a girl, who had been in, I'd gone to camp with her. And I knew that she had some issues with self-harm and she had some issues with depression. And it was, she just had a really hard upbringing and was just like doing her best. And her self-harm scars were incredibly visible. And she was very open about the fact that she was just miserable and was having a horrific time as a human, just trying to survive. And this fucking 24-year-old guy who is still to this day one of the most arrogant human beings I've ever had the displeasure of encountering, decided to try to call a demon out of her, assuming that her depression was the demon.
Yeah.
And she was on the ground having a panic attack, like flailing around. And he's doing this in public at youth group.
Yeah.
And we're all just standing around him. And I remember, as like a 13-year-old, thinking, no, this is this is not what we're supposed to be doing. Like it like awoke something in me, and I was, it was, I felt like sick.
Yeah.
And I think the reality of it was I had dealt with depression. I didn't know I had dealt with depression, but I related to her. And seeing something about it, just, I was like, I don't have a demon. Like I have feelings. Like I knew that it wasn't what he was calling it. And it was just brutal. He has gone on to start a mental health organization, and has publicly threatened to sue me for trying to call out all of his absolute dog shit. Horrible person. And if I could name him, I would, but God damn it, I don't want to get sued. And then similarly, I had a situation, and I think the link here is like, I have such a justice driven headspace that was really like, but I guess watered by Christianity, like Christianity, like helped bloom that in me. And then they told me to turn it off, which is confusing. And so I've always been like, this is not right. This is not right. And it will get very fiery. And that's also the neurodivergence in me. I get stuck on things and I like hyperfixate on the fact that something is not right. And it's a little bit of my like just right OCD-ness where I get that way with justice things as well. And in my Christian college, which I did not know was super charismatic going in, we had a really big church sermon like youth night, big, you know, like the fog and the lights and the crying and all that bullshit. And someone got on the mic, and for some reason throughout my entire journey as a Christian, I always had the very strong feelings about the doctrine and theology of tongues. And the charismatic community had a very different doctrine about tongues. And it was a very public thing. People would hop on mics and speak in tongues. People would speak in tongues during worship sets. Tongues was seen as the gift of the Holy Spirit, quote unquote, that could be given to anybody. Everyone had access to it. You had it within you. You just had to activate it. If you couldn't activate it, it was due to your lack of faith. It wasn't. And I, from like a very like logical perspective, that really pissed me off, because I was like, wait, it's a spiritual gift. And like theologically, like not everyone has the spiritual gift of teaching or of prophecy. Like not everyone has the spiritual gift of tongues. And it really pissed me off. And I also got really stuck on the interpretation thing, where I was like, we have no interpreters, like stop. And it really bothered me for some reason. I genuinely think it was more my neurodivergence than it was anything else, where it just really bugged me. And it always had bugged me. I'd get in debates with people, because I grew up in a very like debate Christian household, where you'd learn how to debate Christian topics and shit. And in this church service in college, someone got on the mic and started speaking very loudly in tongues, which from a neurodivergent spot of feeling overstimulated, that always would really stress me out, because it was loud and chaotic and there was really no point to it. And it just would really overstimulate me. And then they did the whole thing of like, if you can't speak in tongues, like come down to the altar and like, we will pray over you. And like, you will like inherit the gift of tongues and, or the gift of the Holy Spirit, because that's what they called it. And this girl, they had this girl come down and she starts trying to speak in tongues and she can't. And there's like 10 people that have hands on her. And she was someone that I knew that was having a really hard time in college, was having a hard time making friends, and was very anxious. And it was so fucking see-through to me watching this, just knowing this girl is trying to prove her worth, prove that she's good enough to feel accepted in this community. This has nothing to do with anything besides that. And no one fucking caught on to that. And I'm just watching this, like, she's trying to prove that she's worth something. And because she can't publicly speak fucking gibberish, she's going to think that she's not worth anything. And you guys are all participating in this in the most public of forums. And you could just... It wasn't working. There's prayer and it wasn't working. And I could see her getting frustrated, and I got mama bear protective, and I didn't know her very well at all. I elbowed people out of the way so that I could go down and pray for her and pray the opposite of what they were praying loudly. Because I was like, no, this is not right. Like, this is not right. She's going to walk away from this with so much shame and so much disappointment in herself. And she's going to view, and I never cry in the podcast. Fuck. she's going to walk away from this thinking it's her fault and thinking that she's less than because of your fucking stupid theology.
Yep.
And it was just like, this is your fault. You're doing this to her. And I went down and I was like loudly praying the opposite of prayers. And I had people looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing? Because I'm like, don't give her the gift of tongues. Like, let her feel worthy. Let her feel like know that she's good enough without any of this shit. And I'm like loudly cussing in the altar. I'm getting very dirty looks.
Oh my gosh.
And
I love it.
I finally like gave up and went back to the green room and was just hysterical. Like hysterical. And it just felt so icky to me. And I kid you not, it was like the day I checked out. I hate that that's the reason, to be totally honest with you. I wish I could say that my reason was like, I saw a gay person being absolutely harassed and I was like, that's wrong. Unfortunately, that wasn't my reason. Like, my reason was more selfish than I would like it to be, because to be honest, like that felt so icky to me because I related to it and I got it, which it's such a common thing for Christians to like, not like, especially people like ex-religious people who are exiting, to not get it until it happens to them. It's so common, where it's like, I met a gay friend and I was like, oh my God, they're not bad. And that was my experience too, where I like started having gay friends and I was like, oh my God, these people are not evil. What the hell? I've been lied to. And I wish I could say that like I got to that conclusion without having to have some sort of personal relation to it. I wish I could say that it just like clicked and I realized how fucked up everything was, but it didn't. I had experiences where I started to have firsthand experiences and realized that they weren't what I had been told they were. Mm-hmm. And that was like the starting point. It kickstarted something where it was just, I remember literally saying like, this is not the school for me. And I thought that I was going to be in the charismatic Christian environment and I was going to go and preach and I was going to go on mission trips. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I was like, no, this is fucked up. Like, I don't think this is what I want. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think this is what's good for me. I don't think this is what's good for the world. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I slowly started to unpack a lot of the racism and the ableism and the homophobia and call back to moments as like, as a 13-year-old, I went toe to toe with another 13-year-old lesbian and screamed at her about the fact that she was going to hell. Mm-hmm. And I've had to just like sit with that as an adult. Mm-hmm. And unpack a lot of the internalized homophobia and like unpack it and know that I can't ever apologize to her. Like, I don't know her name. I don't know where she is. And I can't undo that. I can't remedy it, but like, I have to kind of just sit with it and try to live and do better moving forward. And that's a disgusting feeling. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying any of this to get like pity, because I think that what I did was shitty. And I've had people in my comment section tell me, people like you are why I hated myself. Mm. And I'm like, and that's a hard pill to swallow. That's not fun. That feels really gross. Mm. But it's the reality of it. And it's a disgusting feeling, truly. And there really isn't like a right answer of how to unpack it and feel it and deal with it. It's just gross. It doesn't, it's not a good feeling. And I don't think it ever will be.
It's also, I think of, I think Serena, the character of Serena in The Handmaid's Tale, if you're familiar, is such a unfortunate character, but also so poignant for someone like me, because the ways in which we've been indoctrinated and brainwashed, you would think that we would like push against those things, but you end up regurgitating what you learn, you know?
Yeah.
And I look back and I had so much horrible purity culture propaganda just like crammed into me, in terms of who I was and what my value was and what my, you know, like tempting aura was and how, you know, like all of this stuff I just sort of absorbed, and not always like appreciatively, like, there's a lot of it that I was like, no, that's stupid. That doesn't make sense. But then like, as I got older, ended up like regurgitating that information to other girls. And I remember one time I preached a sermon on modesty. Mm. And just like how girls and boys are different. And I think it was all based on that fucking book. What is it? A girl's guide to dating or something like that.
Finding your husband or some bullshit like that.
There's some terrible book about this woman who interviews a bunch of men and like goes, this is how men feel about purity culture, so listen to them, you know, like it's like literally the book. And so I preached this whole sermon about how men are visual and women aren't. And because of that, we have to, you know, change the way we dress and change the way we, you know, act. And I remember one of the other girls in my youth group, like this conversation, and she was definitely like a fighter and like a justice girl. And she was like, well, but like, I sometimes look at like men, like I'm visual, and I was like, not in the same way that men are. Like, I just completely gaslit her and denied her experience. And later on, she ended up actually like confessing to the youth group that she had been struggling with like a porn addiction. And I say that in quotes because I don't necessarily think porn addiction exists, but, she like had been struggling with like looking at porn. And And me as like a, you know, what, 17, 16 year old, like literal, just sheltered child, had never seen porn in my life. Right. Like I just like didn't have access to it. I had no grid for this. And I was like, oh, this girl's fucked up. Like I just had the most disdain and like hate towards this person who like was undergoing a very normal human experience. Because I had convinced myself that all of this was true, that porn was bad, only wear modest t-shirts, you know, cover up, blah, blah, blah. And was so vocal and loud and like saw myself as a leader and saw myself as someone who knew what was right and just further assisted the marginalization of anyone else that wasn't undergoing my experience.
That's a great way of putting it. That is such an eloquent way of putting it.
Oh, thank you. It's kind of a sucky thing, you know? Like, yeah. It sucks. Like, yeah. I perpetuated a system that was already harming people. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, if you look at Serena from Handmaid's Tale, that is who she is. That's her character. She benefits from this system at some level. Mm-hmm. And so did I. Mm-hmm. And so that was the vein in which I like did a lot of damage, I think. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine, like, there must have been gay girls in that youth group that I alienated. Like, I don't, I who knows, but I regret how vocal and loud and sure I was of my rightness.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I've had similar experiences, and that is what gives me a lot of pause now.
Yeah.
Of like, once upon a time, I was so, so sure I had everything figured out. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should like take a few steps back and get off my high horse and assume I'm having a human experience. Everyone around me is having a human experience, and there's a lot of gray, but also like you were saying earlier in your story, like trying to take ownership of the harm you did cause. Like, you were harmed by the system, but you also perpetuated the harm done by the system. And I think that's probably the most nefarious part about extremist religious spaces, is it sucks you in a way of like, well, if you want to be successful, if you want to be good, if you want to be XYZ, we put everything on a good binary, especially in evangelicalism. Like, you will look this way, you will perform this way. And so like, well, I want to be good. Of course, I want to serve God. I want to serve the kingdom. So you might, you know, turn off or take down a couple of the red flags that your inner knowing is like, hey, you should be paying attention to this, and you ignore yourself. And I think that is probably the biggest, while I feel so much pain and guilt around the harm that I perpetuated to others, there's also a lot of shame and guilt around the harm I continue to subject myself to. Mm-hmm. Because I betrayed myself. Mm-hmm. I betrayed that justice. I betrayed that inner knowing, that inherent kindness. Like, I don't want to hurt people. Like, I don't want to, you know, make people hate themselves. Of course not. But I did. So like, how do I sit with that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think asking myself the hard questions of like, what got me to that spot? Is it because I needed external validation? Is it because, you know, being really honest and real with yourself? Because I think the biggest point in my experiences and in evangelical spaces is like, don't listen to yourself, listen to me, because I am the mouthpiece of God.
Yeah. Mm. And it's that like God complex. Like, exactly. You're so sure that you're right.
Exactly.
Because like, you're a humble sinner, right? Of you're course. A humble, lowly, dumb human, mm-hmm. but you have access to the God of the universe who has every answer in the world. Mm-hmm. So you get to have all the answers, mm-hmm. and never be proven wrong.
Yes.
Never listen to other opinions because, well, I've already heard from God.
Exactly.
And it's this false humility where you get to scapegoat and be, yes. like, well, God said this, not me. Exactly. These are God's answers.
Exactly.
And so you never actually have to, like, stand up and account for the harm that you're causing and the way that you're betraying yourself and the way that you don't even listen to yourself. Like, mm-hmm. the deeper and deeper you get into evangelicalism, the farther and farther you get away from being able to, like, hear your own conscience.
Yeah.
You know, like your own gut, your own inner, like, understanding of right and wrong.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
or you delve into this sort of, like, outer belief in what's right and what's wrong. Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it all so dark. Mm-hmm. And I think that is how and why we are seeing the church get louder and louder and more aggressive with things like Black Lives Matter, with things like, you know, Roe v. Wade.
Barbie is woke now.
Barbie's woke, guys. I don't know if you heard. You know, like, we have a laundry list of things, and it's because they don't want to share the quote-unquote mouthpiece. It's like, no, 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 I know the right way, so you don't get to. And so we're seeing that reaction to, like, we actually get to make our own decisions. We get to author our own stories, if you will. Super cheesy way of saying it, but it feels true. And I think we're seeing that combativeness. So because there's not that willingness to relinquish control. And so.
Yeah, and everything about, I think, the charismatic evangelical experience takes all of that to level 11.
Yes.
I think, for sure.
That's why it feels so, like, triggering for all of us as we're talking about this, is, like, it's not just deny your human experience. It's deny, like, the human experience. Like, deny basic understandings of how the world works and, like, the universe. I don't know, like, basic laws of physics. Just you like step beyond sort of reality and you start believing for, like, this completely supernatural, undefined realm that, and I'm not here to, like, stand up and say there is no supernatural or spiritual realm or whatever. I don't know. Who knows? But, like, when you're saying, no, you can actually just automatically get a download from God of an entire new language and it will just come out of your mouth and it's the most beautiful. Like, that is so against your natural instinct as a human.
And
so much of the charismatic experience is that way. Like, believe in faith and you could deliver this homeless person right now from the $5 that you're handing them on the street.
Absolutely.
Like, it's like this insane, like, outside of reality, outside of clear logical thinking realm that you can ever be in. And I think coming out of that is such a mind fuck.
Absolutely.
In so many ways, because you're like, how did I have faith for this? Where was me in all of that?
Well, can I go back to what you said earlier? Because I think it's sitting with that question of how did I get here? We dehumanized each other. We were dehumanized and we dehumanized others. So I think in the repentance, if you will, journey is how do we rehumanize ourselves? How do we rehumanize others? Like, and I think that is part of the guilt and the shame that you're feeling.
That
maybe we all feel about our past is like, oh my gosh, I'm recognizing the human in front of me. Mm-hmm. And that is heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And I think that is part of the key to healing.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, my body was telling me that was wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Like, or my anxiety was telling me that was wrong. Or, you know, whatever you called it. Like, I think of this one time in an In-N-Out. And this was a very, very small thing, but very crucial to my deconstruction journey. Where there's this homeless person, or I should say a transient person who appeared to be mentally unwell, was in an In-N-Out in California. And he was kind of harassing the staff and harassing the other patrons in the restaurant. And it seemed like he was saying that, you know, he had ordered food and they were saying, sorry, you didn't order food. And I felt this overwhelming sense of guilt and shame and what I used to call the Holy Spirit tingle, right? Mm-hmm. But looking back, I just felt this overwhelming sense of like, if I don't help this man, like we are, I don't know, like this is my chance to serve God. Like it's now or never kind of thing. You know how, I don't know. Mm-hmm. They drill that into you with charismatic space. Like when you feel the God tingle,
yeah,
you have an opportunity to step into something extraordinary and you don't want to miss it.
Yeah.
And so I bought this guy some fries and, which is like so minor, definitely. If you feel the need, buy a guy some fries or a gal, there's nothing wrong with that. But what was wrong was this internal overwhelming sense of panic that I was experiencing in my soul. And it ended up actually not helping the situation. It made the experience like 10 times harder on the like poor minimum wage In-N-Out staff that are trying to like run this shit. And this person like did not comply with any, like it didn't help anything is what I'm saying. And I walked away from that experience going, I thought that feeling was the Holy Spirit my entire life. Mm. And actually it was just anxiety.
I've had a very similar experience. I was in a movie theater and it was very, what, like 3 years after the Dark Knight situation. Mm. And I was in a movie theater and a man who was a person of color came in with his hood on. And I attributed that as the Holy Spirit, this like horrible sense of anxiety, my whole body feeling like shaky and scared. Yeah. I attributed that as the Holy Spirit telling me that, and I was convinced of this, that like the movie theater was going to get shot up mm-hmm. and I needed to leave. And I tell my dad, like, I think we need to go. And he was like, why? And I was like, the Holy Spirit. And I grew up in a family where that is taken as a, okay.
Yeah.
There's no like questioning. There's no like mm-hmm. the fuck. Like, what do you mean? It's yeah. like a yes, ma'am. I got you. And so my dad was like, okay. mm-hmm. And we like dipped out and I was on Google all night, like looking and looking and looking and, couldn't find anything. Like the movie theater didn't get shot up. And I was like, oh, my dad was like, well, maybe us leaving, like, is the reason why it didn't happen. Like maybe it like pushed yeah. that man out of that decision. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so I kind of just like let that be. And I was like maybe 15. And then again, I was, 18 in college and this was very soon after everything that had happened in the college youth group mm-hmm. with the tongues and the me checking out.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to go to a concert with a friend. And I just had the most overwhelming anxiety and was like, no, 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 something's bad. Something bad's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen. Like it's the Holy Spirit. Something bad's going to happen. And I skipped a concert for one of my favorite artists who is now massive. And he wasn't massive at the time. So now mm-hmm. I can't get tickets.
No.
And at the time he was not massive. And I skipped it thinking the Holy Spirit had told me to stay home because there was going to be some tragic event.
Yeah.
And I made the correlation of like, hang on, this has happened before and nothing bad happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of hit me of like that experience when you were 15 in that movie theater was you having anxiety that was based in racism, which is an interesting thing to unpack mm-hmm. yeah. of like you had stereotypes about certain types of people and assuming that those people always inflict violence and are dangers to society.
Yeah.
And you convinced yourself that that was God telling you to get out of the situation.
Yeah.
And there was no questioning. There was no critical thinking. There was no, the movie theater didn't get shot up. Maybe that wasn't the Holy Spirit. Maybe that was just me being worried. There was no unpacking it. It was just like, I mean, even like my dad affirming it and being like, maybe you stopped it. I was like, yeah, fuck, maybe I did. Like, I'm amazing. Yeah. And so there was no curiosity. Mm-hmm. There was no like probing that and thinking, huh, this is weird.
Yeah.
Maybe I should think about this a little more. And when I was in college and the same kind of experience happened, I realized that's not the Holy Spirit. I have fucking social anxiety. Uh-huh. And those are two different things. Yeah. And it was something that I realized, and it wasn't like an immediate realization, but unpacked it for a while of, I had been taught that any negative feeling, really any feeling in my body was the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
It was like, unless it was lust, then not the Holy Spirit. Unless I'm turned on, everything else is the Holy Spirit. And I could attribute that to really anything.
Yeah.
I could crash my car and say, I felt like the Holy Spirit told me to, when that could be impulse harm OCD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You could attribute anything to it.
Sure.
And a huge part of my deconstruction and just my trauma healing as a human has been recognizing that after leaving religion, like I had such a non-existent relationship with my body and my feelings. And I had such a low understanding of what emotions actually were and what they felt like. Mm-hmm. And not only is that really harmful to me as a person, because and feelings are informative. And sometimes it can be really hard, especially if you live with anxiety, to be able to, you know, figure out which feelings are genuine fear that is informative. Mm-hmm. Like if you're in a, you know, you're in a situation and you really feel like something's off, if that's a genuine, your body trying to inform you and give you some clues to get out. And that, I'm not saying that from like a higher power. I'm just saying like, just really critical thinking of like looking at the situation and trying to evaluate, or is it just anxiety? And I had no idea. I had no idea which one was which. And in my support group that I based this entire podcast off of, I did a support group before and then I created my own. And the one that I was in with an actual therapist, first worksheet we did, children's therapy worksheet, very first thing we covered was, here's a body, color where you feel certain feelings. And there was a color coding. So it was like joy, fear, disgust, anger. And we did a color code and we got to associate which colors we thought were the best colors for each feeling. And then we colored on our body where we felt things. And I remember it took me forever. I was like, fuck, I don't know where I feel any of these things. Like, I guess I feel like disgust in my stomach because like nausea, but like, I don't really know where I feel anything else. And I think I had almost every single feeling in my throat.
Yeah.
I was like, I feel fear there. I feel joy there. I feel anger there. I feel sadness there. Like, I don't know where I feel things differently. And I did that worksheet multiple times over the last like 3 years following that, because it kept changing, because I started to kind of recognize like, oh, I feel anxiety in my hands a lot. I'll start shaking and like, I'll feel anger like in my cheeks. And like, I started to kind of be able to figure out where I felt things. And I started to realize I had no relationship with my like inner instinct or my conscious or like my gut. And a huge part of my trauma healing has been my therapist just being like, Fina, trust your gut. Like you don't trust your gut. And if you were to trust your gut, there would be so many situations that would be so much different for me.
Yeah.
Because I have always been taught to externalize my gut and basically place my own instinct in a pastor's hands or in God's hands and say, that person knows my own gut instinct better than I do. And they get to have the authority over that, which is so codependent and so toxic. Mm-hmm. And it's been so harmful and has caused so much harm in my life. I've put myself in situations because I didn't listen to my gut instincts because I had such a broken relationship with myself. Mm-hmm. Like there was such a, I lived outside of my body for a very long time. And I have a tattoo on this hand, I don't know which hand it's on, that literally says back in my body that I got when I left religion, because I was like, okay, like, and it's so cheesy, like, oh, we're coming home to ourselves. But like, genuinely, it's like, okay, I got to relearn how to be a human. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes with admitting so much of the fucking shitty things that I did while operating kind of very much so out of my body and taking everyone else's word as the Bible. Mm-hmm. Not really having any agency, not having any independence, and when you don't have independence and you don't have agency, it's very easy for other people to instruct you to do very harmful things and for you to just be like, okay. And that's not to say that I don't have responsibility in it, because I think it can also be easy for people to be like, oh, well, I was just a kid. And yeah, like that's very fair. You were just a kid, and there's a very weird, nuanced relationship with like acknowledging I was a kiddo and I forgive myself for that. And I did the best I could with the tools that I had. And I harmed a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those people still are living with that harm that I caused. And to them, it doesn't matter that I was a kid because I caused harm.
Yeah.
And so trying to like marry those two things is very weird. They're two puzzle pieces that don't fit very well. So it can get really messy and jagged and doesn't feel very good.
Yeah. Well, there's something you touched on in there about like not having to understand systemic racism or like not having any understanding of like bigger issues. And I think back to this like unhoused person, I truly believed in that moment, like God could transform this man's life if I bought him some fries. Right. Like, and so I think there's so much like ownership in education and in understanding other people's experience that Christianity removes from you. So it's like you almost like don't need compassion or empathy or anything like that, because you don't have to learn the complexities of housing and minimum wage in your state.
Well, because you could just pray and it'll be fixed.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes.
Exactly. Like, I think of like Bethel standing, I don't know if you've seen this clip of like, we declare racism ends today, and they have a Gandalf staff, and it's,
oh yeah, I've seen it.
But like, that's what we believed. We believed you could declare those things away. We believed you could, you know, like have a supernatural interaction with someone away, or you could leave a movie theater and save a whole, you know, like terrorist event from happening.
Narcissism.
Yes. It's so narcissistic.
Yeah.
Because it's Christian supremacy, which by the way is like my favorite term in the whole world. I like heard it for the first time like 2.5 years ago, and I was like, boy, oh boy, that is a really good way of putting it. And it is so narcissistic. And we've talked about actually on the podcast before the relationship with narcissism and religion, and specifically the pipeline of like abusive relationships, like getting into Christianity and then getting into abusive relationships, because Christianity attracts narcissistic men.
Mm.
It's a safe haven for narcissistic men, which I will credit Catherine Spearing of the Uncertain podcast for that, because she came on and said that. And I was like, we were in the middle of the podcast, and I was like, you just blew my brain to bits. Like that, it like, my whole worldview was like, woo, in the middle of the podcast. But it really does. Like, it's a safe haven for people because there's no accountability, there's no critical thinking, there is no, you don't have to question what you believe. You don't have to compare it to other people's experiences. You don't have to learn about other people's experiences. You don't have to have compassion. You don't have to have empathy. You get to just run rampant with your own experience and assume that that is the sole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it attracts people who experience trauma and chaos as children, specifically a lot of men who experienced chaos and trauma as children. And Christianity gives them a way to just not have to unpack any of that, not heal, not unlearn, not figure out how to become better, and instead gives them a unlimited source of power and authority and so-called knowledge that they get to write off any bad experience, anything that they've done wrong. They get to just say, well, no, God told me, or I have God-given authority because I'm the man, whatever. And it really does stem from this like very patriarchal lens, but at the same time, you're teaching everyone else in that community the same things. Mm-hmm. I don't know about your guys' experience, but for me, it was very much so like I was right. And in the hierarchy of things, it was that umbrella where you have God, God speaks to man, man speaks to the wife. And I was still above everyone else in the world. I was below the men, the Christian men, but I was above everybody else. Mm-hmm. And as a 12-year-old girl, I wholeheartedly believed that I knew more about the afterlife and what to do and what was right and what was wrong than a 90-year-old individual who had way more life experience than me.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, well, no, I have the Bible. You are wrong.
Yeah.
And it's such a batshit crazy way of thinking of things. Like it, as an adult, it boggles my mind that I was so arrogant and confident mm-hmm. in something that was so incorrect. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of wild to me. Yeah. But I think that that's part of why, like you mentioned at the very beginning, your deconstruction like sucks and you had a breakdown and it kind of like just like your life crumbles mm-hmm. because when you are so sure of something mm-hmm. and so sure that you're right and you have a moment or a series of moments that help you realize, oh shit, I'm not right. This mm-hmm. is wrong. It's not just like you're unpacking that one religion. You're unpacking like your entire way of approaching the world and humans and like how you uncover information and looking at things with a more open mind and a critical lens and not just only taking anything that's religious as the truth. I mean, it is a mind fuck. Like it really is. And it's weird and it's icky. And I want to end on advice. And we try to do this a lot on the podcast because a lot of these episodes are heavy as shit. And we will go into like the most like kind of stuff. And then I always want to try to leave people with like some aspect of there are ways to heal from this. And yes, it can take a very long time and it can be very painful and you can feel really guilty and ashamed, but there is healing. And so I wanted to ask you guys if you could all share like a piece of advice that you would give to someone who's starting to unpack all of this and maybe is stuck in that like self-shaming and self-hatred point where mm-hmm. they're feeling really guilty and embarrassed. Honestly, yeah. I think there's a huge aspect of embarrassment with all of this mm-hmm. and embarrassment can shut you down very quickly where then you don't want to be honest about the fact that you made mistakes because it's so humiliating. Mm-hmm. What would your advice be to someone who's like reading this and or listening to this? No one's reading anything we're talking. Who's listening to this and is just feeling kind of overwhelmed and doesn't know how to take accountability and like, mm-hmm. actually own the fact that they fucked up and then move forward.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. No, I'm kidding.
Great question. Excellent question.
Okay. So, I will share something that gave me comfort as I was stepping into the unknown and stepping across boundaries that I didn't know were allowed to be crossed or wasn't sure were allowed to be crossed, especially as I considered like, am I right with God in this process? And and I say this now as a poetic statement and not an authoritative statement, because I'm gonna reference the Bible. I look back at it now and I see it as a poetic thing. At the time it did feel very authoritative to me. But Psalm 139, obviously a very famous one, but there is a verse in it that says something along the lines of, and I'm not going to directly quote it because again, we're going to remember this is poetic, was that if I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I ascend to the depths of hell or descend to the depths of hell, you are there with me. And, I really held on to this faith that if God's grace was truly as wide and as deep and as long and as vast as it is described, that it would cover me as I uncovered ideas and looked into things that felt forbidden to me before. Mm. And that was just like all I held on to for a very long time in my deconstruction journey, was that, you know what, like, no matter what happens, you know, this faith I had at the time, it was my faith. Maybe now I would see it as sort of like this assurance of my goodness or my worthiness. But then it was maybe like my rightness with God, is unchanging. And, there is no wrong way to examine your faith and your spirituality. And there is no absolutes. And that you can really look into things and if for anyone that's still a believer and really struggling with that, I truly believe that your spirituality will not fall apart because you're looking into this thing, into these things. And there's always, you can always turn back. You can always step away for a long time and discover it again. Like there's no absolutes. Mm-hmm. So I would just say that in terms of like stepping onto a journey as a human, like there's a lot of grace, both from the Christian perspective and just as a human being. So,
yeah, one thing that I thought of is a metaphor that's from a book that we read and reviewed on the podcast, but I don't remember which book it was. Maybe y'all will remember as I say the metaphor. But one of the authors of a book we read talked about this, this idea of running off the edge of a cliff. And Pure. Which one?
Pure.
It was in Pure. In Pure by Linda K. Klein. She's incredible. She's talking about running off the edge of this cliff and sort of like in the old Roadrunner and Coyote cartoons, they would run off the edge of the cliff and they would sort of still be running, but they're not on anything anymore. And they're running and then there's nothing underneath them, but they don't really realize that there's nothing underneath them yet until eventually they fall. And I love thinking about that metaphor because as we run, eventually we float and eventually we feel like there's nothing underneath us. And it's okay to be in that space. Mm-hmm. It's okay to feel like your feet have been taken out from under you. It's okay to feel like you're in a liminal space. Mm-hmm. It's okay to not really know where the ground is right now. I think that we feel really tied to the idea of things being black and white or right or wrong, and this binary thinking that can actually be pretty limiting and harmful. And if we are okay with sort of floating for a bit, then we get to explore so much more. And I think at the same time, as you're floating, as you're unsure where you are or what's going on, you're not alone in that. There's so many other people that feel the same way. And there's so many people, especially right now, that are questioning their religion and questioning their upbringing and that are working through faith and are on a variety of places within that spectrum. People who are attempting to reclaim Christianity and people who are entirely rejecting Christianity. And there's people to empathize with you. And so, yeah, that's my encouragement is stay in the unknown. It's okay. It's okay to be in that space. You don't need to exit out of it by a certain amount of time. There's not a specific time you need to follow. And you get to be with others within that. Even if it's people who are not even in your direct circle with the people that you see every day, but there are people that feel that same feeling that you're feeling. Mm-hmm. So
that's good. I have a few smattering of thoughts. Also a verse that I would like to reference. I don't know the address, but that's fine. And it's when Moses was on the mountain, and it says, and Moses went up into the deep darkness, for God was there. So I would say, follow God into the darkness, whatever God means to you, whether that is the God that you've been raised with, whether that is the universe, whether that is the divine feminine, whether that's yourself. Meet yourself in the darkness. You will not spontaneously combust. You will be okay. I promise. And a few things that have helped me is being kind to myself, being present, which are all very easy things to say, but the practical application is quite challenging. But being present and being honest with yourself, because for a long time, we have either denied our own voices or been told our voices don't matter. So being able to really be radically honest with yourself is a game changer. And then follow what you delight in. If you want to get a crystal collection, but you have been told that that is witchcraft and you will be possessed by a demon, get the fucking crystal collection. Get some tarot cards, do some yoga, wear some leggings with a shirt that doesn't cover your butt. Do the things that follow your delight, follow your curiosity, because it will not sabotage you. It won't do it. And I think it's really important for people coming out of extreme religious spaces to test waters. And see that they're going to make it. They're going to keep breathing. You're going to be okay. And I think there's one more thing that I'd like to say. And it is, I've been learning from a Stoic philosopher whose name I have promptly forgotten. But there's this saying, and it is that there is no race, just a runner. The race doesn't exist. It's just you. So allow yourself that space to do what you need for yourself. And then you will be able to, you know, make reparations if that needs to happen. You will be able to deal with your guilt, deal with your nasty, hard feelings. You will be able to reconcile with your past. And you'll be able to grow and move on. So I don't think setting deadlines for yourself is helpful. I think being present is the best way, right? Not stuffing the feelings, but moving through them. So yeah, those are my random smattering of advices.
And two more things. One, find people. You're probably going to need to find people who aren't in the evangelical space to work this out with. If you're really, there might be some people that you can walk alongside in that space, but be careful about who you choose. Because there's a lot of people who in any point of view will try and convince you of their rightness. And I would say just be wary of anyone who thinks they figured it out and isn't just supportive of you on your journey and where you're at. Number two. So yeah, green flag is if someone says, great. Yeah. What a great process of discovery. Keep going. Like, that's great where you're at. And they have no judgment or expectation of you to be anywhere else. That's usually a good sign. Number two is, you mentioned that you have a lot of people reaching out to you asking, like, where do I find community for these deconstruction spaces? And Emma actually found her deconstruction group through the New Evangelicals Network.
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure that you said something about that, because there is a resource.
Yeah, the New Evangelicals, I don't know if you're familiar with them, but Tim Whitaker runs it, and they have a website where you can sort of like make a profile and put in like who you are. Cool. And I don't know how common this is in other places, but you can see there's like a map on there where you can see other people that have signed up for New Evangelicals who have chosen to disclose like their general location. And there were a few others in our area. And actually, the woman who is like one of the people that runs my church, she found me on there because she also has a profile on there, and she slid into my DMs. And so,
oh, I love that. That
was how I like found them. And I think New Evangelicals is a great resource, I think, especially for people who still see some value in faith practice. And they have like, I know that they have like, what's it called? Like Zoom groups that they'll do and stuff like that through New Evangelicals. And there's lots of great content on his podcast and different things like that. But that's one resource that has been helpful to me and that brought me into the church community that I'm in now, which church is even a weird word to call what it is, but it is.
Yeah.
Centered around people who are very much deconstructed Christians that still want to talk about Christianity and still have a little bit of faith practice happening. So
yeah, no, funny enough, I'm I've been DMing Tim this week.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're trying to schedule a podcast.
Yeah. He's great.
He really is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll link that. And I know the other one that I have, a lot of people have referenced to me, is the Reclamation Collective. I know they have resources. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, I think they might have some sort of directory for religious trauma therapists.
Mm. Oh, cool. Love those. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
That's amazing. Okay.
Yeah. So they have a find a therapist page on their website.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I believe it is, I think it's their people. Mm-hmm. And I'm just scrolling through and they have people in Washington, New York, California, Arizona, North Carolina, Texas, Alberta.
Wow.
Like Pennsylvania. And then it says, unable to find a provider in your location, check out the Center for Trauma Resolution and Recovery, which provides trauma-informed coaching in all 50 states.
Wow.
I know that the folks that they have on their list, it looks like for the most part are licensed mental health professionals.
That's amazing.
Which I will say, one of my like pieces of advice is find somebody with a license.
Yes. Thank you.
A Christian counselor is not a therapist.
Your pastor is not a therapist.
A Christian counselor is not a therapist. And simultaneously there's been and this is not to rag on life coaches, because I think it's an interesting space that has been like opened up, especially on social media. And I don't think it's a bad thing to have somebody who is like, who you feel comfortable and supports you. I do think it's the most helpful if you have the resources and it's accessible to you to have, if you want to have a life coach, also have a licensed therapist.
Yes.
Like, have both. Mm-hmm. Because I have heard horror stories from a lot of folks who have found their quote unquote who they thought was a therapist online, mm-hmm. specifically through social media, and then find out that they are just a life coach and end up getting some really poor advice, or there is a very strong ethics code mm-hmm. within licensed mental health professionals.
Yes.
And there isn't that same ethics code with life coaches.
Yep.
And so I've had friends that have had like really severe ethics code violations with life coaches because mm-hmm. they're not held to the same standard of like accountability.
Yep.
And so I would be wary of that.
Yep.
And that's not to say that like folks who I've had people on the podcast who are coaches, but I've been very intentional to make sure that they disclose that they are coaches and that they are not they're not licensed professionals
mm-hmm.
because it can get really sticky.
Yes.
And sometimes life coaches are way more affordable for people who don't have insurance or like whatever. There can be really good beneficial aspects to it. And I don't think that you have to have a license to make you like a smart, wise person that has good advice.
Yeah.
But I just think specifically with the training and the ethics code, it can get really sticky if you are treating your life coach as a therapist.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So
trust a life coach is about as far as you would trust a friend.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Like, it's just a person.
And if they're a support person like on your team,
that's great.
If you've got a team of support and they're in that group, that's fantastic.
Totally.
I would just always be wary of treating a life mm-hmm. coach, treating anyone rather, mm-hmm. not just a life coach, treating anyone who does not have a license mm-hmm. as your licensed therapist.
Yes.
Because and I'm not even saying that as much because of the education, because yes, the education is really important. But I think that there are people who have just as much talent and skill as therapists that don't have the license.
Absolutely.
But I think that the biggest thing is the code of ethics, because mm-hmm. that is where you can get really sticky.
Mm-hmm.
Even for folks who don't know, like code of ethics also, prevents from like disclosing information to family members mm-hmm. and like things like that, where you might not even know that that doesn't exist. But if you have a life coach who like knows your family legally, they can tell whatever they want to tell to your family. So there isn't the same privacy. There isn't the same protection.
There's not the same.
So
like,
be careful.
Client.
Yeah.
Whatever privileges or whatever. Yeah. A lot of important
100.
Things.
So be careful.
Also, if a licensed therapist isn't working for you,
oh, dump them.
Get another dump one. Em. There's
dump them.
Yeah.
Listen, there's some shit therapists out there. That's the reality.
Oh, yeah.
But 10 out of 10. I've been going to therapy for almost 6 years now. It has actually saved my life. So if it's something you're on the fence about, go. Yeah. Just go. If you hate it, you never have to do it again, but you should try it.
Yes. And I would say, and I've said this before on the podcast because I have passionate feelings about this, but date your therapist, mm-hmm. like interview them, like that you, just as much as they are doing an intake session on you, you are also doing an intake session on them and ensuring that they are someone that you feel safe with. Yeah. It is hard, especially for folks who've grown up in religion, to like set firm boundaries mm-hmm. and say no to people. And there can be that like people pleasing tendency where I've had friends that like get stuck in therapist dynamics where, because it's like, oh, I don't want to hurt their feelings. And it's like, no, oh my God, leave.
Yeah.
But I have quite literally walked out of a therapist appointment before. Like I had an intake appointment with someone and the lady, wouldn't even speak to me until she got all of my billing information, which I was like, okay, fair. You want to get paid. Like I get it. Uh-huh. And she then proceeded to like pick up the phone and yell at the insurance company on the phone. And I quite literally took the phone out of her hand, like very gently, but it was her landline. Took the phone and went, thank you so much. We actually don't need any more help, but thank you for all your assistance. Hung up the phone and went, we're not a good fit. best of luck to you, but I'm going to head out. Wow. And she was like, what? And I was like, we're not a good fit. No. Best of luck.
Yeah.
And I just like, what a move. I was like, no, ma'am, absolutely not. We're not going to yell at like customer service professionals. And while you're in a therapist appointment with me, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. You're my hero.
But yeah, but be careful, like be aware. If you have that gut instinct that makes you feel unsafe in a therapy situation, listen to that. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, therapy can always be like a little uncomfortable because you're mm-hmm. disclosing vulnerable information that can feel uncomfy. But if you feel unsafe, pay attention to that. I've had therapists that ask me way too invasive questions and I didn't listen to it. Mm-hmm. And I kept going and seeing that therapist and they weren't helpful. And it was kind of like not fun and triggering and harmful. So listen to that. If you're unpacking religion, I would really highly suggest a non-religious therapist or a therapist who identifies as religious, but doesn't bring it into their therapist practice. Mm-hmm. My therapist is a Christian. I met her at a church. She has never spoken about God to me in the 5 years that I have known her.
So good.
If I bring it up, she will talk to me and relate to me and empathize with me. I know nothing about her personal experience with God.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with me. And so there is no, if your therapist is ministering to you, you need a new therapist.
Yes.
And they're probably not a therapist.
They're
probably not licensed.
No, they're probably violating some of their codes of ethics. Supposedly agreed to.
Yep. I mean, I had a Christian counselor when I was at my main home church for 4 years, and I did not know anything about licensing, and I was a teenager, I was young.
Yeah.
And he was seeing me, my sister, my mom, and my dad simultaneously.
Ooh.
He was disclosing information from each person to the other person because he wasn't licensed.
Yeah.
He was in his 60s, I was 15, and every single session was about my quote unquote porn addiction, and I'm like disclosing information to this like 60-year-old grandpa.
Yeah.
Absolutely
I'm getting,
not.
Like ministered to, I'm getting Bible verses. I'm getting like kind of shamed. Like it was very weird.
No.
And I did not realize until my older sister went to college and went to college for social work and started taking classes.
Mm.
And she was like, hang on, like this is wrong.
Yeah.
And she lit into my dad and was like, we have to stop seeing this person. Like, this is not ethical.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that that wasn't how therapy was supposed to be until she, thank God, went to college and like figured it out and came home and was like, hang on. So it's very easy to fall into those situations. Just like be aware. And then I would echo everything that you guys said. I have found so much healing in exploring and trying things out.
Mm-hmm.
I had my hardcore slut phase after I left religion and it was healing as hell.
Yes,
I didn't have soul ties. I was fine. It's really not that big of a deal. And if you want to stay someone that doesn't have sex, that's also fine. I've had so many people come into my comment section and be like, why are you forcing people to have sex? And I'm like, if you would like to not have sex, that is totally fine.
That is your choice, though.
But yeah, I would say explore. I found so much community online. There's so many really cool online groups for deconstructing people, especially now in the last 5 years, it has picked up so much and there's so many more resources and community than there used to be. And the timeline thing, I think like I expected myself to be done with it at a certain point. That's not how healing literally ever works. And there are moments, even in this podcast, like I never tear up about religious trauma, literally ever. I talk about it far too much. And so I'm a little disassociated at times with it. And there are times where it hits me a little more than it does at other times. I've been going through it with my partner recently where we're both like, oh fuck, there's stuff that we didn't realize is impacting our relationship that we're having to unpack. And it's gonna keep coming up. And I think the more that you expect it to come up at some point, the less of a surprise it is. And it's a little less jarring and shocking when you're like, oh yeah, I'm just like working through this again. It's fine. If you look at it as just kind of an ongoing process compared to like something that's supposed to have a day where it's closed and finished and sealed. Cause I, from my experience, I don't know if that ever happens. I'm guessing no.
In the deconstruction space, there's no exercising any demons. So
no.
It's all human. Nope. It flows. It ebbs and flows. It comes in and out. There's no.
And like, I know the whole it's not linear thing is so like played out. I know everyone has said that 45,000 times, and it's on so many mugs. But like, it really isn't linear. It really is an up and down thing. There are days it's going to be triggering as hell, and there are days it's going to literally feel like you haven't, you couldn't be further away from Christianity. It's not a big deal at all. And that's, it's fine. It's whatever it is. And I would just encourage people learn. I found so much healing and learning from other people and through the podcast, having people on the podcast of different, backgrounds and human experiences and socioeconomic backgrounds and like learning about people and their experience. And it's enlightening and it can be really overwhelming to learn, but it's also, I think it's like the number one tool for deconstruction is just education and learning and unlearning all the shit that you were taught that was not true. But thank you guys so much for coming on. You're all so like ridiculously eloquent, and the way that you all speak sounds like you have a script that you've like written out in front of you, because it is so like full of wisdom, which I was not expecting, because I kind of just ramble on my podcast and you guys are all so eloquent and thoughtful. And it's pretty rare, not rare, but it's more unique when I have someone on the podcast that it feels so warm and comfy and safe so immediately. And so thank you for what you guys are doing and for taking the time and sharing and for being so vulnerable, because this is a conversation that can really easily feel embarrassing and shameful. And I was nervous about having it with people that I'd never met, to be so honest.
Super fair.
And I'm so, it was so refreshingly comforting and safe and non-judgmental. So thank you guys for coming on. I really, truly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I'm like so delighted that you even reached out to us. I'm like, shut up. People want to come talk to us on their podcast. So literally, thank you. It is such a delight. And yeah, I've loved getting to talk to you. You're so smart too.
Yeah,
I'm like, what are you talking about?
No,
you don't ramble.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I want to give people a chance to listen to you guys and find you online. Do you want to share social handles where people can listen to the podcast, all that good stuff?
Yes. Sure. We are Woman Being Podcast on everything, pretty much. We're on Instagram. We're on TikTok. We're on Threads until Threads dies, I guess.
Nice.
Or maybe it will live. We'll see. We're not on Twitter. We also can be found on all major podcast platforms as Woman Being Podcast. We are gearing up for season 4 of the podcast right now. Yes, very exciting. That will be launching in September. And
something like that.
Yes. And we are, we also have a website, womanbeingcommunity.com, where you can also just find all of our things,
all the stuff.
You can find everything there. So if you want a one click stop, that's there. We that's us. That's the end. That's what we're doing.
Well, genuinely, thank you so much for coming on. You guys are welcome back literally anytime. Oh, anytime. Listen, at all.
Yeah. You have our email. So you just let us know.
Yeah.
Anytime.
I will. Yeah. I will genuinely hold you to that.
Amazing.
We have so many more things to say.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I feel like we scratched the surface of it in this episode, which is how I feel almost every time I end a podcast. I'm like, we could have talked about this for 4 hours.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so much for coming on.
Yeah.
And for the listeners, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the podcast at Mindful Minds Pod on Instagram and TikTok and online at mindfulmindspod.com. And you can also join our Facebook group that just launched and that will stay launched. And then keep your eyes open for the sticker collection. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will see you guys next week.